Welcome to the Coaching Revealed podcast and our series on leadership coaching. I'm one of the podcast hosts, Austin Matzell. In today's episode, I'm joined by Emily Tarani as we interview Shule Gander, a fellow and friend of the Institute of Coaching. This interview explores the day in the life of Shule as a seasoned coach based in Istanbul, Turkey. Shule covers everything from her routine, from morning rituals, to setting the tone for success and navigating the challenges of coaching both individual clients and corporate teams. We delve into Shule's world as she shares real-life anecdotes, providing a glimpse into the transformative power of values-driven leadership and how Shule integrates the latest research and science into her coaching toolbox. Shule shares her global perspective on coaching and coaching in a diverse cultural context. The podcast concludes with Shule's reflections on continuous professional development, leaving us inspired along our own coaching journeys. Don't miss out on this insightful and dynamic interview with Shule. Let's get started. Hi, Shule. Thank you so much for joining us for this interview today.
Hello. It's very nice to be with you today. Thank you for the invite.
And where are you joining us from?
Yeah.
I'm joining you from Istanbul today, Turkey, and it's 5 p.m.
And so this podcast series, we're focusing on executive coaches and leadership coaches. So I'd love to hear a little bit about what type of coaching you do.
Sure. I do executive and leadership coaching. So I coach CEOs, CXOs, sometimes rising talent in one-on-one coaching sessions. I work with them on neurocreativity, building their neurocreativity, increasing their resilience and adaptability, managing conflict better, and resolving conflict, of course. Also purposeful and values-driven leadership, asking the question, what are my values and do I live my values in my life at home and at work? I also do team coaching within corporate settings. So I work with various teams. Depending on their need, I may do one or two workshops on neurocreativity or conflict resolution, or I may design something for the unique needs of the team, which would be a longer 3 to 6 month engagement, really diving into their strengths and weaknesses and working on various parts, starting from different thinking styles, moving into constructive and destructive behavioral tendencies in conflict, and then slowly moving into building a more cooperative culture.
That's amazing. I feel like you have such a wealth of different things that you're doing within the field and that you're working on with clients. For anyone who's kind of newer to coaching or learning about how coaching works, with all the different backgrounds you have, where do you kind of start with a new client when you're getting to know them?
That's a great question. That is actually the critical stage, isn't it? It's the contracting stage. So I start with setting expectations. I find that clarity is really important within a coaching engagement. So what are the specific wishes, needs, and eventually goals that the client would like to reach? What do they expect from a coaching relationship?
That's amazing. And speaking of starting, I would love to hear how you got started being a coach. What was your journey to finding the world of coaching?
That was during my therapy, out of all the places, actually. So during my midlife crisis, when I started asking myself, what have I done? And therefore, what have I not done? Mm-hmm. I started also working with a coach to look at what are my values that I deeply believe in, and do I live my values in my life? And that's when I decided that I wanted to transform my career from strategic consulting into executive and leadership coaching. Of course, they're, again, very much interlinked. And I do wear from time to time different hats. But I saw that you can come up with the most creative, incredible strategy in the world. But if you don't have passionate leaders to execute it, it means nothing. It's going to stay on paper. So I decided to switch from ideas to people in this part of my life as a career.
And are you satisfied with the change? How rewarding do you find the profession now that you've been in it? And how many years also? I don't know if you've mentioned how many years you've been a coach.
I've been a coach, like a certified coach, since 2017. Mm. And so it's, I would say, relatively new, huh? Mm-hmm. In that sense. I find it very satisfying. It's about making a difference, helping make a difference in somebody's life.
Earlier, you mentioned neurocreativity mm-hmm. was one of the areas that you work on with your clients, and it came up a few times. For anyone listening in, how would you define neurocreativity, and what is it that you're working on with the clients?
We all have one brain, but I think we uniquely use it in different combinations. So some of us may be more imagineers in our problem solving and thinking. Some of us may be more empathizers in our leadership and social intelligence. Some of us may be more of a realist. Some of us maybe more of an organizer. So understanding where your strengths lie and the blind spots that come together with it, and being able to practice neurocreativity, which is going into different parts of your brain for various tasks or challenges in your life. Does that make it more clear?
Yeah. And I'm wondering, so working with clients, you're helping them both. Are you helping them both find out what mm-hmm. their strengths are, and then how to be coming from different places of their self to show up for their teams and their organizations?
Correct. And this is also very important in teamwork, because everybody has different strengths, right? And so you look at how you complement each other and where you conflict. And you also see where you need more help in the team. If everybody are great imagineers, but there is no realist on the team, you definitely need to go recruit one to bring yourself to reality and make some of those dreams come true.
Within this work, is there some level of formal training that other coaches would be able to get in this space? Or is this kind of a tool that you've envisioned and created?
Actually, I got my coaching certification from Columbia University. I attended a master's level coaching program there that takes about a year and a half. It's a combination of online and offline. And one of the things that we used quite a bit and then we were certified in was Neatling Brain Institute's thinking preference assessment. So it kind of lays out your thinking profile, your brain in front of you. And you can also look at the collective brain of a group or a team. So that was a starting point. Of course, I added what I've learned through my own research and conversations with peers on top of that as well.
I love that term, collective brain. Can you elaborate on that a little bit more and how you work with the collective brain in a team setting?
Well, we all have our own strengths and unique ways of thinking and communicating. So I try to test that. And then sort of bring that together. And you can do this through the MBI report as well and tell them this is how you think as a team. So sometimes we have a lot very cognitive thinking. Sometimes we have more emotive thinking in a team. Sometimes we have very analytical thinking. Sometimes we have very holistic thinking in a team. Of course, this depends on the kind of education you got, what you're doing at the moment, how you trained your brain up to that point. But also simply the way your brain has come to be wired through various life experiences. So knowing that and using your strengths and outsourcing those qualities or skills that you don't have or you have less of.
And you talked about the concept of collective mind. So how does it look when you're working with an individual client with their neurocreativity and then taking that to the group level? Are there any surprising things that come out at the group level?
I think it's always more of a colorful, insightful discussion. within a team or a group setting. I come from an advertising background, actually. That was the first, one of the first things I did. I spent 10 years at an advertising agency. And what I loved about it was the creative insight generation sessions we had, where we arrived at an idea, a seed really, to come up with a new campaign. And I find some of the things that go on in team coaching quite similar, because we're looking at different individuals and everybody's sharing about their strengths, their blind spots, their emotions, their experiences. And then all of a sudden, this group realization comes out. It's like, huh, this is what we can do better. So I find it actually quite exciting and rewarding.
You're based in Istanbul. Are your clients also and the teams that you work with? Where are you primarily working with people?
Interestingly, I found myself like all over the place of late, but mostly traveling a lot, working with the Middle East and the Gulf region.
That's awesome. And it's interesting for us, Austin and I are both based in the US, so we'd definitely love to hear more, any insights you have about what it's like to coach different cultures in the Middle East, and just anything exciting that you'd want to share that we might not know based out of the North America.
I guess, first of all, for me as a coach, it always keeps me on my toes because I'm working with different cultures. So nothing can be really automatic, right? Mm-hmm. And there are lots of surprises. I also learn a lot from the way people approach problems or working as a team. If I hate generalizations, but if I were to make a couple of observations, I think Middle Eastern cultures can express their emotions, but they're reluctant to do so at the beginning. Confidentiality, trusting the other person, building that safe space, and not having judgments, not being labeled, is quite important. Also, people live in quite close social circles. So everybody knows everybody, or everybody knows of somebody who knows that the other person. So it takes a while for people to build that trust and open up and really be authentic.
I know that the whole conversation of building trust with your clients is one of the biggest topics I hear coaches, and especially new coaches, bringing up, is how do you build that rapport? So what have you found being successful for you going across different cultures, different countries and continents, and building trust with clients all over the world?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I cannot answer how exactly you do that. I think it's part chemistry, part energy, part getting references about the coach and looking at their past work. It's also, of course, laying out at the beginning the confidentiality boundaries very clearly and signing contracts about it. I find that especially within forum facilitation, this is also very important for people and, in fact, critical. You have to create a confidential space for different people to share their life experiences and life moments from the heart as well as the head, with minimum filters or none. So there are, of course, different techniques I use to bring that about, but it's a group effort, and it all starts with building trust to create vulnerability.
You mentioned having space for vulnerability within teams and how that is really important for people to come both with their head and with their heart. I'm really interested to hear a little bit when it comes to the leadership. Are you finding that a lot of that comes when the leader is helping provide that space, or is it more you who has to cultivate the space for the team?
I think it's both. So once you model a behavior, then it's more believable. And that therefore there is trust and people follow. So what I do during facilitations is I always model first. So I go one step or one level deeper in the conversation and see how the rest follows. If we have the leader working with us, which I usually mostly ask for, then of course they also model. So they get two different role models doing this, and they follow. Otherwise, that doesn't happen. It's all about, I think, authenticity and walking the talk.
Yeah. What types of exercises do you like to model then for the teams that you work with?
Let me give a couple of examples. There are many, of course. I do something like a Me Too. So everybody comes and forms a circle. I stand in the middle of the circle and I start reading various statements aloud. And they start from, I like red, I'm wearing pink, I'm an only child, to, I was once fired overnight from my job, to, I have panic attacks. So whoever relates to that statement walks towards the middle of the circle and acknowledges the others that do so. And once you see people coming in to the circle, you then take the next step to come and reveal something about yourself and acknowledge it quietly.
Yeah, to me, it kind of sounds like you're providing a really good intentional space for people to have conversations that they may want to have, but they don't necessarily usually have the space to have.
Correct. They may not have the time. They may not have gotten there with the energy and the depth with a hectic workday. Yeah. We create that space together. But it's I must say, this is a co-creation. It's a collective effort. I can try everything and it may fail if nobody pitches in. It doesn't usually happen, but I just want to say and underline that it's quite a co-creation process.
Ready to advance your coaching practice? Join the Institute of Coaching and tap into the world's leading resource for coaching science and professional development. With over 4,000 members across 130 countries, the IOC offers invaluable networking opportunities with an elite global coaching community and innovative learning to broaden your knowledge and keep you at the forefront of coaching best practices. Engage in cutting-edge learning events with world-renowned coaching scholars, from webinars and seminars to discussion groups, research projects, and more. Try any membership free for 30 days. Use promo code IOC Podcast and visit instituteofcoaching.org/join to get started. So I'm hearing that you're pretty flexible and adapt to the needs of those that you're working with.
Yes, yes. I have clients who come to me with a very specific goal. I go, okay, I'd like to transform my career. I would like to leave the family business. I would like to decrease my anxiety and build my resilience. And then I have clients who come to me and say, I don't know, really. I'm just trying to figure it out and I need a partner to figure it out. I have teams that come to me and say, okay, we have this huge issue going on. We need issue clearing and possibly better strategies and tactics to deal with conflict next time. And then I have teams that come and say, you know, we have to work together better, but somehow we're not there yet and we don't know why. Can you help us figure it out?
That's really great that you're able to work with them no matter how specific or general their request is. How do you prepare for sessions? What, you know, you have to, in order to create psychological safety for your clients and the groups that you mm-hmm. work with, I'm sure there's a lot of prep work that you're doing yourself.
Yes. Yes. I find that actually most of the work happens before as opposed to during, especially with teams and groups. So I try to get to know members. So I have one-on-one conversations with them. I ask them what they're after in the session. I ask them what is their biggest challenge. I ask them what keeps them up at night and sort of put that information together. I also have different surveys that I share with teams and groups to look at their health. in terms of various criteria that is important for the team or the group. How effective is their communication? Do they, is there trust? Do they trust one another? Are they goal oriented? Is there a lot of conflict or none? Is there diversity of opinion? Is there equal airtime? So on and so forth. So I get that input as well. And of course, I work with the leader of the project in designing something that would work for that team.
How do you specifically show up as your best self?
I have my own little routines, my morning meditation in the garden. If I don't get that, I go, well, it's not always in the garden, somewhere in a hotel room or some quiet corner. Either a morning or a like late afternoon walk to calm my mind, and making time to rest. Just really not think about anything and rest. Ample time in between sessions, before a session. Sometimes, you know, when I go to a country, for example, they ask me, can you do 5 engagements in 5 days? Mm. Which means 9 to 6, 5 days in a row with different groups and teams. And I say, I'm sorry, I can't. I need one rest day in between. I can't do 2 sessions in one day. I can do only so many coaching sessions within the day. I find this is really important that I need to get myself and my energy back and my focus.
Sounds like you set boundaries and need to. It's necessary.
Yes. Definitely.
I'm wondering when it comes to you setting that boundary with a client. So you're saying, I won't do 5 of these sessions 5 days back to back. Does that kind of help you set the tone or help you figure out if you want to work with the team, if they are honoring of what your boundaries and your preferences as a coach are?
Mm, so that's a great question. And the answer is, yes, I mean, I don't do this on purpose, but it kind of sets the tone for both of us, what their expectations are and what I can deliver as my best self, as a coach and facilitator. And I have learned, I think this also comes perhaps with age and the years, to say no to certain engagements. And to say, I'm really sorry. I would love to do that. I would love to help you, but I really cannot.
Now, how important has learning how to say no been for you as a coach? Like saying no to clients if you realize you don't have the bandwidth?
I think it's very important because when I don't say no, I will get burnt out or I will not like the output that I'm delivering. For example, in one engagement, they told me, can you please do this in 30 days? I said, 30 days is really pushing it. Can we do at least like 9 to 3? On the day, it was like, no, we have 4 hours. So what happened was, people said, came with great expectations and they left with 50% of them not answered. So that was, for example, a great lesson for me and for them to say, let's not do this next time.
This is bringing up, I'm wondering what your biggest challenge as a coach is, or what's been the most challenging experience you've had as a coach?
Oh, I have a funny one.
Do tell.
I don't know how funny that was. So this is my certification exam in front of like live coaching in front of 2 ICF coaches and 2 Columbia University coaches. So I'm in a room. The judges are across from me. This everybody went through. And my random client walks in for the day. So I get up. I say hello. She sits down. And so I go, what's in your mind? What would you like to talk about today? And then she says, my mother. And she starts sobbing. I'm like, okay, this is going to be a great exam. So I reach in to my bag, take a Kleenex out, and I'm also trying to calm myself down. I offered her the Kleenex, some water, and then I ask, why the tears? How are you feeling? And it kind of worked out. Here I am as a coach afterwards. I did pass that exam, but that I found was quite challenging, for example. So like something that comes completely out of the blue that you're not expecting. Another group session I walked into, and one of the members was not going to come because there are panic attacks. His panic attacks was really interfering his mental health problems. So I arrive on the day and they tell me, actually, he just checked out of this place that he was at to have his problem solved, and he's going to attend this meeting. It's like, For example, I'm a coach. I had my undergraduate degree in psychology and communication, then master's in communication, but I'm not equipped to deal with serious mental health problems, for example. But it kind of, on the day, sort of landed in my lap.
How did you navigate that? We have a course, actually, Austin's pretty close to it, about navigating mental health issues with clients as a coach. So I would love to hear your experience of what you did and how you handled it.
Well, I set the expectations at the beginning again by saying that we were there together to have equal airtime for everybody and to create a collective experience and to not necessarily dive into one person's issues or problems only. And from time to time, I had to maybe ask a question, make a reference to steer the experience in the right direction. It was tough. So those were some challenges and surprises.
And what about on the flip side? What has been the most rewarding, and what's been the most, the biggest opportunity you've experienced?
I think the most rewarding has been when I ask a question, and that question is quite surprising and challenging for the client, but there's an insight that comes afterwards that we discover together. For example, that's a great moment. Or in a team, when I see that there is really at heart a resolution happening around that issue and conflict through active listening, mirroring, understanding each other's constructive and destructive behaviors.
So you started coaching back in 2017. I'm wondering, when did you first hear about the Institute of Coaching? When did you join the IOC?
Douglas Chu, who's a fellow member, has also gotten his certification from Columbia University. And we were having a conversation on a Columbia platform when he mentioned that I should definitely try IOC out because there was nothing like it. I was like, what is this thing then that there's nothing like it? And so I joined some conversations and I became a fellow member. And I find that IOC adds incredible insights into my coaching. I love the balance of science and art of coaching, how we bring in theory, but also look at how that theory comes to life in coaching practice. I love our as much as I can attend our weekly peer sharings and conversations, all these experienced, wonderful minds coming together to share and learn from one another. And of course, our mentors and learning from them.
That's amazing. Also, it's fun because this podcast series, this first one, is kind of like an alumni session from Columbia because we actually interviewed Douglas as our other fellow member for the day.
We didn't realize you two are good friends. It's so funny. Small world.
Yes, it is.
It sounds like you really integrate the research and the science into your work. I know you mentioned that's why you were attracted to the IFC, but from everything you said, it seems like you have a strong focus in your practice. Was that something that you always did from the start, or you learned to do with time?
I have been doing it from the very start. I think one of the things that initiated it was writing part of my graduating requirements at Columbia was writing an academic research paper ready to be published if you wanted to. So I did mine on resilience coaching because that was the area I was really interested in. I really learned through all this research and reading and thinking so that I could share something more concrete as well as deeper with my clients. Since then, I've always integrated it. Also, I like clarity and I like commitment. So to get that clarity and the commitment, looking at different assessments and models brings two minds of the coach and the client together in a unique space to work with.
What about your coaching practice today is bringing you fulfillment? Like, why do you choose and continue to choose to coach, to spend your time?
I think there are two things. My curiosity is satisfied. I learn from my clients, and clients learn from me in the sense that we share experiences, questions, and resources. And two, this is something I said at the beginning, coaching creates really can, if done well, and if the chemistry works, can create a difference in somebody's personal and professional life for the better. Can become a better leader, a better spouse, a better parent through coaching engagements. So, again, that's the biggest reward, creating some change for the positive in my client's life.
Love that. And so in the next few years, where do you see your career going?
Well, in addition to continuing doing what I'm doing, I think I'm going to complement that with a serious, like a program or a degree in something, most probably neuroscience. Mm-hmm. I also would like to get the self-discipline and make the time to share my learnings in the form of a book.
That's really exciting.
Yes. those two things are the new projects. So you can hold me accountable to that. Until the next podcast, okay?
Yeah, we'll be interviewing you about your book, or you'll be doing a webinar about it next time
we'll be on the lookout. I think we'll shift into some rapid fire questions now. So number one, what are three things you hope to bring to each coaching session?
I hope to bring clarity. I hope my client walks a little bit out of the fog. I hope to bring action, something to try, something to ask, something to change. And I hope to bring hope, something to look forward to.
Beautiful. And what are three things, you kind of already answered this, but what are three things you hope your clients take away from each session?
Emotional expression. I think this is also space. It's not just an intellectual discussion. It's a space to recognize what we feel and express what we feel in relation to what's happening in the client's life and specific events or triggers. So I think that's important for my clients to take away, that they can express themselves emotionally. an action plan that goes for the takeaway of the client as well, something for them to go do next, to try out next, and more resilience. Perhaps not one session, but what I mean by that is more realism, more resourcefulness, and more proactive.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a favorite word to use during a coaching session?
Tell me more. It's not a word.
Okay, that kind of answers the next one, which is, do you have a favorite coaching question? And is that your favorite coaching question then?
I have two favorite questions that I'd like to add. One is, if you were the coach, what would you ask yourself? And another one is, what percentage of your life is your life? It's a great space to work in.
Very powerful.
And thank you so much. It's been amazing to get to meet you and talk with you today, Shule.
You are most welcome. It's been a pleasure for me. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Coaching Revealed, brought to you by the Institute of Coaching. You can learn more about the Institute on our website at instituteofcoaching.org. You can stay up to date with new episodes of our podcast by liking and following Coaching Revealed. You can also find us on social media, on LinkedIn, Instagram, and X with the handle Institute of Coaching. We also love hearing from our guests, so please reach out to us with thoughts you have on this episode and any questions you have about coaching. Until next time, this is Emily Tarani with Coaching Revealed.